Welcome to a special edition of Arts ID. I'm Robin Pressman.
I'm David Templeton, and tonight we'll be taking a look at two phenomenal events currently sparking discussion within the theater community.
One is the new show by the provocative solo performer Anna Deavere Smith, and the other is a Broadway musical so unexpected and outrageous it's causing cultural shockwaves all over the country.
Plus, you'll hear some highlights about what's going on locally in the world of theater.
It's Arts ID on KRCB Radio.
The certainty of death is one expectation we all share in common. In Anna Deavere Smith's one-person performance piece, Let Me Down Easy, running through the middle of August at Berkeley Repertory Theater, the acclaimed actor-interviewer explores those universally identifiable themes of mortality, illness, doctors, patients, treatments, tests, and death itself. Through a series of short theatrical portraits, recreated from conversations she conducted over a period of several years, Smith morphs into more than a dozen of her real-life subjects, famous and unknown, all stationed somewhere along that spectrum between life and death, denial and acceptance. Best known for her roles in television shows like The West Wing and Nurse Jackie, Smith first made her name as a shape-shifting theatrical documentarian with an uncanny knack for reflecting other people's voices, styles of speech, and physical demeanor. In shows like Fires in the Mirror, about the Crown Heights race riots in Brooklyn, and Twilight Los Angeles, about the aftermath of the Rodney King trial, she used those skills in describing pivotal events through the eyes of those who experienced them. In Let Me Down Easy, directed by Leonard Folia, Smith mixes the views of regular folks with recognizable public figures, becoming, over the course of the 95-minute show, athlete Lance Armstrong and boxer Michael Bennett, playwright Eve Ensler and sportscaster Sally Jenkins, Texas Governor Ann Richards and film critic Joel Siegel, plus a variety of cancer patients, doctors, parents, teachers, and ministers. The result, first seen in New York 2 years ago, is a strategically generalized mosaic of opinions and attitudes, some highly compelling, some less so. By the end of the show, the combined effect of all these people discussing his or her own very real eventual deaths packs a quiet kind of wallop. Anna Deavere Smith, by celebrating the most basic hopes and fears of such a wide variety of her fellow human beings, once again proves the old adage that ultimately death makes cowards and artists and rebels and heroes of us all. In a few moments, we'll talk with Smith about Let Me Down Easy and how she developed this entertaining yet challenging show. But first, we asked one of Smith's subjects to tell us about the experience of being transformed into a character in a major theatrical show. Here's a clip from Let Me Down Easy in which Smith portrays Dr. Ruth Katz, who was then at the Yale School of Medicine.
And an oncology fellow which is not one of our full-time faculty, but someone who's in training here, specializing in oncology, came into my room. I want to apologize, but we can't find your records. Could you tell me what kind of cancer you have? I said, this is appalling. He said, no, hey, it's not just you. It happens here quite a bit. I said, I am appalled for every patient who comes on this unit. And I had to go through from like the beginning my whole story. Well, eventually, I'll tell you as an aside, eventually I knew I could tell by his question that he was going to get to the question of, do you work? And I've never advertised my position around here. I just wanted to be treated like everybody else. And so, he says, do you work? You know, about midway through his questions. And I said, I do. And he said, are you working full time? And I said, I am. And he said, where are you working? I said, I'm associate dean at the medical school. Now he looks up. At this medical school? I said, at the Yale School of Medicine. He found my files within a half an hour.
The conversation recreated here by Smith was one of the earliest interviews she did as research for this performance piece, long before it was named Let Me Down Easy. Dr. Ruth Katt spoke to us from her office in Washington, D.C.
My involvement actually began 11 years ago when Anna Deavere Smith was invited to Yale, to the Yale Medical School, to do a special presentation at Medical Grand Rounds on the doctor-patient relationship. That was the theme of the Medical Grand Rounds. I was asked by the chairman of the Department of Internal Medicine at Yale, at the time I was serving as associate dean at the medical school, to participate in the effort. I had just had a breast cancer diagnosis and had gone through quite a strenuous course of treatment, and was asked by the chairman if I would participate in this program, and I volunteered to do it. And that was 11 years ago, and I actually take some great pride in telling you that I am the only surviving member, if you will, of the original program that she put together at Yale that led to, ultimately, Let Me Down Easy.
By surviving member, Dr. Katz means survival in terms of having made it through the laborious editing process. Of the dozens interviewed that day, Dr. Katz is the only person who went on to be featured in the finished show. She describes that interview as a bit old school, just two people and a few pieces of recording equipment.
At that time, she only had a microphone. Now she actually videotapes people she interviews, but at the time she only had a microphone. And we briefly introduced each other, and she just started asking questions, and I believe the interview went well over an hour.
Katz still marvels that out of everything discussed during that hour of conversation, the story that eventually ended up in the show was something she almost never mentioned at all.
This story, that is the 3 minutes that come out in the show, I just told in an offhanded way. I sort of said to her, and, you know, kind of off the record, let me tell you about this experience, because it is, on the one hand, somewhat embarrassing about the institution I was then working for. On the other hand, I think Anna picked it in part because it's a story that all of us can, in one form or another, identify with in the healthcare system.
Though she's been interviewed countless times by journalists throughout her career, Dr. Katz ranks her session with Anna Deavere Smith, an actor, as one of the most attentive and focused interviews she's ever experienced.
She has this amazing ability to bring people out in a way that I have rarely seen. She tells the story of one of the reasons that attracted her to do this show was when she interviewed patients or people involved with the healthcare system, that she had asked very few questions and people just opened up and were happy to tell their story. I think there's more to it than that. It's not just that everybody wants her to hear their story. I think she has a way of making you feel very comfortable, especially about difficult topics. She has a way of making you feel comfortable. She has an incredible ability to remember the things that you have told her and to bring them up later in the interview, which is a way of saying, I'm really listening. And when you think, you feel more than think, when you feel that someone's really listening to what you have to say, you feel more comfortable and more at ease and more willing, I think, to talk about some difficult, often intimate kinds of things. I found it easier to talk to Anna in some ways about what I had gone through than I did with my own family.
Most interviews, of course, end up as newspaper articles or radio news segments. In this case, Dr. Katz wasn't merely an expert offering a few quotes. She's now a character in a show that has played in New York City, Los Angeles, and now the Bay Area. Seeing oneself portrayed word for word by a world-famous actor is, she admits, a special kind of experience.
I think I certainly felt this the first time. You're a little bit in denial. You sit there and say, that's not how I sound. That's not how I move. Those aren't my motions. Yet there's this instant recognition, of course, that she's saying your very own words. And I knew those were my words. I, of course, remembered exactly what I had told her.
Anna Deavere Smith is known for the detail and precision of her characterizations and for putting remarkable effort into getting the voice and physical mannerisms of her subjects exactly right. How does Dr. Katz feel Smith has done in capturing her vocal and physical essence?
I hate to admit it, but she got it right. the, the way I fold my arms, the way I move my hands. She really got it right.
It was through the process of interviewing cats and her other initial subjects that Anna Deavere Smith gradually defined the direction her new piece would take. By the time the piece was finally staged in New York in 2009, the national health care debate was becoming a major topic in American politics.
I thought that this subject was perfect for me just because people are extremely expressive when they talk about their health. And in my work, which I've been doing now since the late 70s, early 80s, I consider myself first and foremost a student of expression. So I found that the people I talked to were very expressive. I then expanded my net and started to think about the body more in general, not just the ill body, but also the healthy body and even the body of people who can do extraordinary things that many of us can't do. And then I started to think about the body as vulnerable to the state. And I went to Rwanda 10 years after the genocide. I went to South Africa at the time that the president was not acknowledging AIDS as a real disease. And I've made 5 versions of this play. Finally, when it was time to bring the play to New York, President Obama was rolling out his health care bill, and I wanted the play to tell the human side of the political debate, and that's how it took this shape that it does now.
And the title, Let Me Down Easy?
I just woke up one morning while I was working on it and, you know, just woke up first thing in the morning. I thought, gee, that should be the title. I don't know, maybe I had a dream or something like that. I'm not sure. Don't remember the dream.
Well, I think at least one, maybe two of the people that you do the portraits of uses that phrase as well.
Right, because as a sort of a cap on almost every interview I did, once I knew what the title was going to be, as I would say to people, the title of this play is going to be Let Me Down Easy. What do those words mean to you? Mm-hmm. And so when you hear, I think, 2 people make reference to it, it's because I have asked them that question.
So what do those words mean to you?
To me, they signify grace and kindness, is that we have every opportunity to use our power, whatever power we might have, whether that's being a huge real estate person or being a wealthy, having an oil well, or being a governor of a state, or playing jacks better than your cousin. You can use that power in a variety of ways. And, you know, you think of the person who has power as on top and other people as not. And it's how do you negotiate your resources. And so I think of it as a kind of a prayer in favor of protecting vulnerabilities of any kind.
How many people did you interview to get to these that are in this show?
320, over 320.
How do you do that and then whittle it down? How do you make your decisions about what stays in?
Well, the whittling process is hard, and it takes a very long time. And, I first of all, I'm the person who has all of the material in my head. By that, I mean I don't know it all, but I have a, I'm the one who does the interviews, right? So I have a sense of what is available to me. And then early in the process, I start just doing characters for different people. In the case of this play, the first person was a producer of a theater. That's a very unusual trajectory. Usually the producer is the last person doesn't really have anything to say. But first I just went in a room with a producer who wanted to produce the play and for 2 weeks just did characters. And then, then I did it in front of directors, and in the theater we have people called dramaturgs who focus on text, and I usually like to have a very diverse assortment of people in the room. And at that time, usually I go home every single night and rewrite the play, because something will come up in that discussion where I'll think, oh, yeah, well, I remember, you know, this person I met in the forest in Uganda who said blah, blah, blah.
Well, with so many people that you talk to, are there stories or characters that you become kind of fond of and attached to that...
All 20 that you see in this show.
So of all the 320, these are the ones that you found
well,
the strongest connection
like that,
to?
But, you know, that sort of way of thinking about it most or not, or because there are all sorts of things that happen. That, for example, there was a doctor, a traditional healer in Uganda, who was a very important part of this project, you know, and I'm really sorry that he's not in the play anymore, you know. Or there were people who I met in Rwanda who were victims of the genocide and even some killers, and that experience was an extraordinarily rich experience. I'm sorry that they're not in the play anymore. So it's not that these 20 are the most of anything, you know what I mean, in terms of a rating. But I have spent more time with them, right, because they have, one woman in the show has lasted every single, she's the only person, Ruth Katz, you probably remember the character who was a dean at Yale and they lost her records. So Ruth Katz has been in every single production of the show since the very beginning when at Yale. Now, I've gotten to know her. She even gave me a party in Washington. I don't think a whole lot of playwrights have characters that gave them parties.
Dr. Katz said that she thought that you got her physically really, really well, and that was without videotaping her.
Well, yes, that is, you know, in the early days, that's a really good question, David. In the early days of me doing this work, I didn't have any money to do research. And so my earliest pieces were made on by me interviewing people on the phone, and I would never have seen them. And then I would arrive and perform, and people around them would say, oh, my God, how did you get this or how did you get that? And I guess that's just because the way that we talk and the rhythms that we make when we speak probably are there's probably just more power in that than one would realize. So I think that's what that was about. Yeah.
Well, as a student of expression, do you find yourself just studying people in restaurants and wherever you are?
You know, that's another good question, which means I don't know the answer. An old journalist told me that, somebody who had been on the press corps with FDR, if you can imagine, from FDR to, I think, Gerald Ford, he'd been in the press corps, National Press Corps, and he said that whenever you say, that's a good question, it means you don't know the answer. I don't know. I don't know.
Are you aware that you see somebody sometimes and think that would be an interesting character to do?
Well, see, it's funny because, to tell you the honest truth, I mean, I think when I was a girl, I was like that. And the reason I said I don't know is because you don't always know what you're doing all the time, if that makes sense, right? It's like my movement coach just left, and he's a dancer, a wonderful, wonderful dancer who was with Ailey for years. And I'm sure if he and I were to watch some people on the street, he might see somebody and say, that person has perfect turnout. Now, we don't know if that person knows, if they're not studying ballet. They may not know they have that. Do you know what I mean? So
yes.
That's what I mean. Some of what I do may not be fully conscious. When I was a girl, I think I was studying like that all the time and not knowing it and not knowing that it was unusual or not very polite. My mother would constantly tell me, stop staring or close your mouth, because I was just in shock and awe, I think, a lot of times of what I was looking at. And endlessly fascinated. But now what I like to say is I'm not really working unless the tape recorder is in front of me.
With these people that you've now, in some cases, known for years, do you continue to work and perfect your portrayal of them?
Oh, yeah. Well, the work is daily work. You know, you can't just pop up on stage. I wish I could, but sadly, I can't boast that that's what I'm able to do.
So would you think it's possible that somebody who has seen both productions, the New York production and this, may see some deepening of the characters as you portray them?
Have people told you that?
Well, Dr. Katz said that every time she sees you do the show, she thinks you're better at her.
It could be. Well, certainly it's also not just that I'm constantly working but on it, but also, you know, every night I'm doing it. So that could be the case. I think that's right. Also, I think, and many people who've told me this, because there are people who've come back to see the show many times, including Ruth Katz, has seen many productions of this show in many different cities. I think that what people tell me who've come to see it more than once is that every time they see it, it's a deeper experience for them. That every time they see it, they get something else out of it for them. And I think that's because this play is a deeply personal experience for the audience, different from my, although this is the 18th of a series I have called On the Road, A Search for American Character. My two most well-known works are about racial tensions, and they have a more civic framework. I think those civic plays, you could see Fires in the Mirror about racial unrest in Brooklyn, or Twilight Los Angeles about the Los Angeles riots in the 90s, and say, oh my God, I can't believe that happened in my country. Your heart could even be broken. But this play, I think, for each person in the audience, I can't predict at all how they are responding. And I know that they all bring so much to it. And so I think for that reason, it's a very personal and intimate experience that they have with the material.
Well, since you do cover so much ground in it, and there's so many voices saying different things, do you feel the audience is changing sometimes from night to night, maybe picking up on one thing more than another?
Oh, the audience is never, it's never the same. It's never the same. I never know what is going to be out there. You know, I just don't know. I just don't know. So, and sometimes I've been surprised. Like, many actors are a little bit wary about matinees, and particularly matinees, student matinees, or student audiences, because you don't know how well prepared they're going to be. What their attention span's going to be. Are they going to be more interested in some pretty girl sitting next to them? Are they going to throw things at you? You just don't know. And this play, I really thought, oh, no, I can't imagine doing this for, you know, high school kids. And in New York, much to my surprise, they were some of my best audiences. And their questions afterwards were unbelievably perceptive. And the notes that they wrote me were just keepsakes for me. And then in Washington, I was even more terrified because they weren't going to have special shows for students. So then you have this incredible age gap of the people who tend to come to a Wednesday matinee, which tend to be an older audience, more female and older, many seniors, and then kids. Oh, I thought this is a disaster. This will be a disaster. Incredible. Some of the best audiences I've had. And, you know, I mentioned this to one of my colleagues at NYU. I'm a professor at New York University, Richard Schechner, a famous scholar. And he said, well, you know, adolescents are very interested in mortality. They're very interested in death. And so you know, there are these surprises along the way. And I just know that every night when, you know, the assistant stage manager says go, I better be ready for whatever is out there. So you just don't know.
During the course of doing this show, both developing it and then performing it, have you learned things? Have you had your eyes open?
I've learned a lot. I've learned really a lot in this experience. Boy, and, you know, it's been with me so long that I'd have to probably go and I wish that there, you know, I don't keep a diary, but I wish I'd been keeping a diary to see how I've changed over this decade, when I first got introduced to the work and then the 5 years that I was actually actively working on it. I think I know a lot more about the medical system. I know a lot more about doctors. I feel a greater, maybe this is the most valuable thing for your listeners. It's not just personal to me that maybe I could share with them that would be of useful to them, is I've really learned how important it is to have a sense of authority in your own well-being. I mean, I've always, you know, sort of been very conscious of my health and started exercising before it was a movement. You know, in San Francisco, the only places you could go when I started working out were the Y and a couple of, you know, gyms here and there, but nothing like we have now. I mean, I've always had that, but Lauren Hutton in the play says it best. You know, she says when she goes to doctor, she forgets all of her questions. Even though, I mean, you know, she's certainly got access to the best doctors. And, you know, she's famous. A lot of people would like to have her come into the office. You know, famous, beautiful woman, right. First supermodel. Afraid he forgets all her questions. Well, I was the same way for a long time. And I, too, like she recommends, would realize better take a list in there. Because doctors are so, you know, many, even the very good ones, are abrupt. You know, they don't look at you. They don't invite a conversation. Rarely do they invite a conversation. And I have a sense of, oh, my God, I got to get off the phone. I better be ready with all my questions. Well, what became really important is to realize how important it is for me or any of us to have a sense of authority in this journey that we go on. We're the one in charge of our bodies. We're going to doctors, really, the way we go to a shoe store to see if this is the pair of shoes that we want. And to sort of have that kind of a command, and it's hard now, obviously, with all the things you have to do to manage the payment of it, and God help any of us who get a really serious illness to work our ways through. But I think we have to be prepared for that. We have to be prepared to be full, active participants and not to be infantilized by the process, not to feel, a lack of capacity in the process, because we're already vulnerable if we are coming to a doctor with a serious medical problem. So when we're healthy, I think we should be rehearsing how to be ready, not just for ourselves, but for the people around us that we love. And my mother did pass away in the course of me putting together this play. And the fact that I had been at Yale and met a lot of doctors and met doctors who were very concerned about the future of medicine and concerned about whether they had lost their touch as healers. Are they just only scientists now? That really helped me stand up to, you know, a couple rude doctors who were abrupt and rude to me and my family, because I just thought, you know what, this is not going to go this way. This is my mother, and we're just going to, you know, I'm not going to be intimidated, and I'm happy that I was prepared not to be.
And now you're playing a doctor on Nurse Jackie.
Oh, she's not a doctor.
She's an administrator.
She's a nurse. She was a nurse. She's an administrator. She's staff. She's not one of those fancy people. But you're talking about one of my favorite characters. Now I'll talk about favorites. Is Gloria Acolytis, who I get to play on Nurse Jackie. Some of the best writing I've ever gotten a chance to participate in. Of course, I was very lucky also to get to work for Aaron Sorkin, The West Wing. I've been very blessed with writers. And I just love that show, and I love Gloria Acolytis. She may be somebody you don't want to tangle with in a hospital, and she's exactly the type of person you need to be ready to stand up to.
I'm getting ready to wrap up here, but I want to ask, since you did so much research and you had all those rich experiences, do you suppose that there's another show that you might make from some of that other unused material?
I could easily. I absolutely could make another show. Part of my research was even to go to Landstuhl Army Hospital and Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany, which are where our soldiers go when they are in the Middle East. Our soldiers go from Iraq, Afghanistan probably too, and get sort of patched back together well enough to go home and go to the bigger, Army and the Air Force hospitals. And that was powerful. The whole Africa trip was very powerful, very powerful. And I imagine there are probably three other plays I could write. I probably won't, but I certainly have no lack of material for plays or a book. I've had a feast. You know, I love people and ideas. I guess as a student of expression, that would be what I would love. And so this has been an absolute joy. This has been an incredible journey, and there's plenty of unused material may show up in some other kind of way in another project another time.
Well, thank you for taking time to talk to me. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you.